Thanks very much, Kim. It is Tuesday. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here at 9 minutes after noon. Steve Bertrand hosting, and Andrew Herman from DNA Info Chicago is in the studio as well. A little bit later, Suzanne Muchen will be here. You know, she's the co-host of The Big Payoff. It's a podcast on WGNplus.com where they look at different women in the workplace issues. And we're going to talk about the new assistant football coach for the Buffalo Bills, who, like most of the assistant football coaches around the NFL, will be watching the game in a couple of weeks. Bills didn't do so well, but Suzanne will be here. And also, coming up after the break, Mike Zalewski, the state representative, Andrew, who I'm sure you've run into from time to time, is introducing legislation to loosen restrictions on craft distilleries in the state. It's a growing movement. They want to make it easier to have tastings and things like that.
Is it about canning beer, too? I mean, I know that's a problem. Sometimes some of these local breweries have problems bottling beer or putting it in for, you know, some way that you can sell it retail. Yeah.
I don't know about that. This, I think, has to do just with distilling, but I'll ask him about that.
Well, craft beer industry really needs a lot of help.
I know. This isn't craft beer. That's the thing. It's
a struggling industry right now, yeah.
So let's start with the DNA info here where Andrew comes by with openings and closings. And I want to take you – wait, I did not know the name, the actual name of the district until I read this story in DNA info. It is the McCormick Place Event Center.
Yeah.
Take me to the McCormick Place Event Center and tell me what's going on there. Now, that's the place where they're going to build the new DePaul Arena, right?
Right, right. So they're going to build a also a hotel, Marriott, and like you say, the basketball arena.
That's 1,200 room Marriott?
Yeah, it's a pretty big one, and there's already a couple of towers of Hyatt down there. But they're also going to have this 10,000-seat basketball arena that DePaul's going to use. They're kicking in about $80 million. They're going to use it about half the time, and then they're going to have concerts and other kind of events down there. Now, that's all new construction, but there's also part of this whole area is they're incorporating some of the old buildings down there, including the American Book Company building at 330 East Cermak. You've probably seen this building. It's red brick building. It's 100 years old.
It's
really
a landmark,
sharp looking.
Right?
Yeah. It's a real sharp looking building. And so the city has opened up bids to operate a restaurant there. So they're looking for somebody who's interested in taking over 10,000 square feet and putting a new restaurant in.
So the idea is, you know, that I have to say that area around McCormick Place is sort of lost to me because I'm not a conventioneer.
Right.
And I would imagine that might be the case for a lot of Chicagoans. You know, they drive by it, they see it. They know there's a lot of activity there, but it's not the sort of thing that locals go to.
Right.
They're trying to change that a little bit, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they have another hotel, keep people down there. Because now I think a lot of people stay in the loop, and then they either take a shuttle bus or they take a cab to get to the actual convention center down there. And they're just trying to build a new area in which, you know, the people don't have to leave the area, and so you're going to need beds, and you're going to need entertainment, and you're going to need food.
Like a sub-city in a way.
Yeah.
But with the arena and concerts there, I would imagine, I mean, are they going to cater to Chicagoans too?
I think this is really
designed
towards the conventioneers. You know, they the city is constantly fighting this whole convention business. It's amazing how cities steal these things from each other. And you just have to keep the amenities up in order to sell the product. So they are looking down the road and thinking that conventions are a growth area for the city and just adding more accoutrements.
So that's why they're having DePaul play there. So still city people won't have to go.
Well, they'll have you know, this basketball arena. Maybe people will get interested in DePaul basketball more. I don't know.
Let's just say they will. Let's hope
they will. Yes.
Did you see though?
They're going to be great.
Did you see they will one day? The Indianapolis, they think, lost $60 million in convention business over the religious freedom law.
Is that right?
In that brief period, they looked at it, and that was just shows that either walked away from deals or walked out of negotiations for conventions in Indianapolis during that short period of time.
Interesting. So your politics has something to do with the decision-making process, I guess, for conventions. Though you always wonder, like you read about these big religious conventions that are held in Las Vegas. And right. It doesn't appear to bother them that much, or maybe they are sneaking off, or I don't know.
The minister goes to where the sin is. Don't you get that yet?
Oh, that's right. It's more of like a missionary kind of deal, right?
It is. Yeah. Well, you got to know what you're trying to fix. You got to find the problems first. Let's go to Avondale, because there's a word of this new sort of late-night vegetarian restaurant that's borrowing the upholstery of Ed DeBevick.
Yeah, you remember Ed DeBevick's. It was 640 North Wells, opened in 84. It was basically a hamburger and a milkshake kind of place.
And an insult place.
Yes, and the wait staff insulted you, and you tipped him for it somehow. And and for some reason, this hung on for about 20 years.
My kids loved that place when they were little. I don't get it.
Well, they're closed in October. They're going to build a high-rise there, a 22-story apartment tower with 250 units.
Now that they got the time capsule out?
That's right. And they auctioned all the stuff off of from Ed DeBevick's. In December, they tore it down, but now some of the stuff is showing up, the people who bought it. And one of the places is a place called Moonlight Vulture,
right?
2889 North Milwaukee Avenue. And as you point out, it's going to be a vegetarian sandwich shop.
Right. And so, you know, Andrew, reading this story closely, as I did, read every story that you give me, there's one thing that sort of jumps out at me. What do vultures eat?
Well, they eat carcasses. They eat meat.
Right. They eat meat. So this is a vegetarian sandwich shop that I'm just not sure I get.
They've got Ed DeBevick's grease-stained tables. I don't know how much thought went into this, but I tell you, vegetarian restaurants are an up-and-coming thing. We have more vegetarians in America now. I ran across some numbers the other day, and it said in 2009, 1% of Americans identified themselves as vegetarians, and now 5%. So,
is that right?
Yeah, and people are just looking for vegetarian food. And as somebody who's married to a vegetarian, and my son is a vegan, but I'm still a meat eater, I do find myself eating a lot more vegetarian food now.
I live in a family like that, too. It's hard to get everyone sitting down for a dinner.
Restaurants are almost impossible.
And so this will be, and especially late night, I guess, this is a place where they can go. And I know they wanted to do it maybe just vegan, but they're going to branch out to allow for the pescatarians as well.
So they'll have some fish there, but people are looking for this, and if you have vegetarians in your family, you go to a restaurant, and first thing people start looking for is where are the vegetarian options?
Right.
And a few years ago, it was hard to find, and now more and more you go to a restaurant, and there's a whole separate page of vegetarian food. And as I say, I'm a meat eater, but I'll look at the vegetarian food, and if it looks better than what the meat offerings are,
absolutely.
It's delicious.
It's weird, because sometimes bacon in my family is classified as a vegetable. I don't quite get that. But and one other you said is going to bring about the end of the beer run in the city.
Yeah, so there is a company out there called Instacart, and they operate in 13 cities, and they have an app where you go to their website, and they connect with grocery stores mostly. And basically, it's a personal shopper. You sort of order what you want off online, but they don't actually have it. They run to the store for you. And so you go, well, I want this particular brand at Whole Foods, and I want this and that. And so you kind of understand what it is exactly that you're buying because you're familiar with the stores. Somebody goes out and gets it for you and then delivers it to your house.
So it's like Peapod with... How does Peapod work? Are they with a specific...
I think you pick off a menu that they already control, but this is...
So you can pick the store here.
Yeah, so these are, say, Costco. You need 45 rolls of toilet paper all of a sudden.
Right.
And, or, like I say, Whole Foods, certain specialty foods, maybe some vegetarian food or whatever, some soy meat or whatever. And so they run out and they go to the store. They pick all the stuff up. They bring it to you. They charge you a fee. Now in Chicago, this Instacart is partnering with Binny's Liquors.
Ah,
so
okay.
You don't even have to get off the couch to go get the beer anymore.
So if you don't want to miss Coldplay, is it Coldplay at halftime of the Super Bowl?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You don't have to go to the store. Binny's will work with Instacart and bring you your...
Somebody will run over there and get you a case of beer or whatever.
You're hedging your bets. You don't want to buy the champagne until you're sure Denver's going to win. You wait till the fourth quarter and order it over.
Good point. So,
Andrew Herman. Yep, go ahead.
Well, they charge about $3.99 for a 2-hour delivery and $5.99 if you want it within the hour. $35 or more. And then they also tab a tip on there, 10%, that goes to the shopper.
Well, I wonder then if it will result in prices coming down for Peapod if there's competition there, but I like the idea of picking the store where you want to go to.
Yeah, right. So, and they say that $6 is worth it to have your beer in an hour. I'll attest to that.
That's Andrew Herman attesting to that from DNA Info Chicago. Good to see you. We'll see you next week.
Okay, good.
When we come back, we will talk about distilleries, the little ones in Illinois, and an effort to get more. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook. I've got a page at Steve Bertrand. You can also send us a text at 312-981-7200. Yeah, I wrote a piece. I used to write for the Guy page in the Chicago Tribune years and years ago, and I remember writing a story about craft distilleries. I mean, this was 10 years ago. In fact, one of the first craft distilleries, one of the first distilleries in the country, was run by George Washington. There was a distillery at Mount Vernon. It's growing again, the small ones, but sometimes there are restrictions, regulations that get in the way. Representative Mike Zaleski is on a phone line. He wants to help with that. Representative, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. I need George's help passing this bill, so I wish you were still around.
I'm not sure George Washington can help you with the state legislature anymore.
You're right. He probably can't.
Tell me about, first of all, speak, I guess, to the need for something like this. What's holding distillers back?
You know, probably sort of an antiquated set of rules that were developed in a different era. I don't think our liquor laws envisioned a scenario where small business owners would start to, frankly, create their own line of alcohol, like beers and whiskeys and things like that. So, we want our laws to always stay up to date. And I think in the case of a popular industry like craft distillers, it makes sense to revisit those every so often and try to make them reflective of a new and emerging industry.
So what is it right now? They can make 5,000 gallons a year?
Correct. Well, they can make the 5,000 I think it's more. I think it's 35,000.
Okay.
We want to take the full gallonage to 100,000 in a stepped-in, phased-in approach. We also want to do some other things within the bill to loosen the restrictions to allow these small businesses to better market their material so they can get they can grow faster and be more prosperous.
Well, that's the thing. So if I have a small distillery, in my garage, in an office or something, a construction place, somewhere manufacturing, I should say, can I currently have people in for tastings? Can you have a tasting room at a distillery in Illinois?
You may have a tasting room in the front part of the house where you are allowed to sort of sell yourself a limited amount of whiskey. That amount is we want to increase as well, from I think 2,500 to 5,000. What you're not allowed to do is say at a bachelor party or a local business fair, take the whiskeys out and have a tasting for a group of people, sort of part of an event.
So they've got to come. They've got to come to you.
Exactly, correct.
Okay, and so you want to change it so that they can bring it out to different events, like to a street fair or something like that for a tasting. Who's opposed to this?
You know, I don't know, Steve, anyone's opposed at this point. We just filed the bill yesterday. We're going to do our due diligence. We're going to work with the stakeholders. We're going to work with my colleagues. We're going to try to figure out a good approach to get the bill through both chambers and on the governor's desk. We're still early in the process, and as you well know, we have a lot of issues on our plate right. When it comes to state government. So, but I'm always optimistic and I'm always hopeful we can get a bill passed and signed by the governor.
You know, Representative, some products from a craft distillery might help smooth the process when it comes to this budget.
You're right. I don't know if the governor likes whiskey or not. Next time I talk to him, I'll have to ask him that.
When would you think the next time is going to be?
Did I talk to the governor?
Yeah.
Hopefully sooner than later. I would hope that he would reach out to some of us and I've always had really good personal conversations with the governor. We don't agree on every issue, but on a personal level, I think we've had a really strong rapport. So I look forward to visiting with them soon, I hope.
What while I've got you on the phone now, the State of the State is coming up tomorrow. Is this the sort of event that is going to move anything, do you think, or is it sort of going to be a statement of the status quo?
Well, my hope and my expectation is the governor will express a desire to sort of realign state government and move the state forward on areas of procurement, information technology, criminal justice reform. Those are the types of issues that Democrats and Republicans can work together on. And I actually expect there to be a lot of cooperation and a lot of agreement on those issues. The issues related to collective bargaining for workers and things along the lines of how we treat our labor unions in Illinois, where we can't seem to build a bridge. I don't know that he'll visit upon those issues tomorrow. So I'm hopeful that we'll hear some good ideas from the governor, and we'll be able to start making real progress towards a budget.
State Representative Mike Zaleski, Democrat from Riverside, thanks very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Steve, this was a pleasure. Have a great day.
And we look forward to the real celebration when this is passed and signed.
Yeah, me too.
All right, thanks, Representative. You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:37. You're listening to the Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Suzanne Muchin joins us now, as she does most Tuesday afternoons. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve.
Suzanne is the co-host of The Big Payoff. It's a podcast. You should check it out at WGNplus.com. Tell me about your co-host and about the podcast, Suzanne.
So Rachel Bellow and I have been best friends and business partners for almost 18 years now. It sounds like a long time, like I might be like 70 years old, just truly most of my career. And we have a show that's really about the way we're working today. It's about your personal growth, your professional growth, how those things are tied. A lot of people feel like it's a podcast really for women in work, but I have to say, Steve, guys love it.
Well, why not? All right, today we're going to talk about what guys love, and that's NFL football, and the fact that now there was a coach, wasn't there a coach hired by the Arizona Cardinals, a female, a year or so ago or last year?
Right. So last fall, Jen Welter, she was hired by the Cardinals, but she was just doing it as a training camp assistant coach. But even at the time, Steve, that was a big deal. The problem was that when the season was over, when the training camp ended, her contract ended also.
And they didn't keep her.
No.
And so
no.
The Bills made news last week, I think it was, when they announced that they were hiring a woman to be an assistant coach.
And this is huge news.
Catherine Smith is her name. And her job is she's going to be the special teams quality control coach. I don't really know what that does.
Are you asking me?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's funny, too, because we do some work with the NFLPA. But I will say that term, the special teams quality coach, I just really focused on the word coach.
Right.
The fact is we have a woman who the Bills have hired, Catherine Smith, and she is going to be a true full-time female coach, which makes her the first full-time coach in NFL history. This is truly, no pun intended, I think it's game-changing.
Is there a female, are there female officials yet with the NFL? I think there are, aren't there?
There may be female right. officials, but the coaching role has been so historically male. And, you know, look, she's only 30 years old. She was with the Jets. She was an assistant to Coach Rex Ryan. But I think when they say she was an assistant, I really truly think she was more administrative. She wasn't actually helping him coach.
Right. Well, so Rex Ryan was with the Jets before he went to the Bills. Yeah, there was a little bit of background on her. Previously, she was a game day special events intern and a scouting intern. So, you know, I'm sure she's qualified. She wouldn't have been hired if she wasn't qualified, but I'm just not quite sure I get the job description of
well,
it.
Well, and so this
Do
is
Do I sound like a guy who doesn't want it to happen? That's not the point.
You don't really sound like you don't want it to happen, but you sound like most men are would be in response to this news, which is, huh? What does that mean? What does that look like? And here's what I think is really interesting, Steve, is so it really isn't clear. It's not like we can see the perfect steps that got her to this job, but she did have one thing, which is she had Coach Rex Ryan from the Jets really championing her and saying, you need to give this woman a shot. She's really smart. She knows strategy. And I think this brings up an interesting issue for women, which is often what it takes to break those barriers is a sponsor. I mean, we talk a lot about mentorship, but a sponsor is really someone, in this case, like a Rex Ryan, who figuratively puts his arm around you and says, I got this. Let me introduce you to the right people, bring you into the right rooms, and back you. That is hugely helpful.
And that's an interesting distinction, because I think, you know, maybe the term mentor is moving away from that. But I think a lot of people used to associate that sort of activity. You know, he's my mentor. Wink, wink, nod, nod. He's
exactly.
the guy who got me the job.
And nepotism, right? That was a big thing back in the day, right? This person looks like me, sounds like me. I'm going to bring him into the boys club. But I think it's changing, Steve. I think that more people today are recognizing the power of their networks, both online and off, and really breaking into new networks like the NFL does require a sponsor, does require somebody championing you. And that's where I think, look, if Catherine Smith does this well, no pressure, Catherine, but if she does this well,
you've got the future of female NFL coaches on your
back.
It's
not a big deal, Catherine. It's right. just the entire history of women in our country relative to sports,
right.
but no big deal.
You broke the glass ceiling. Don't cut yourself, Catherine.
Exactly.
So we'll see what she does. And maybe by the end of next season, we'll actually learn what a quality control special teams coach.
Maybe by next week I should have that.
It's just the description, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Hey, recently there was a competition, right? 1871 hosted the Challenge Cup?
It's a great competition. So this is a nationwide pitch competition.
And,
so think
and
Shark
you were
Tank.
Judge.
I was. I'm a great judge. As my kids would say,
You're a great judge?
You're super judgmental, so that's a good role for you. But it was a Challenge Cup where it goes local, then regional, then national. So over at 1871 last week, we heard 19 3-minute pitches.
Wow.
And then the three winners of that go to regional, and ultimately there's a national winner.
Okay, and so who did you walk away with impressed by?
So this is so timely because of the election season in full motion. I became a huge fan of one of our three finalists, which is the company that I think is truly game-changing called Ballot Ready. So it's founded by a woman, Alex Niemczewski, and she was at Booth. She won the Booth Challenge, got $30,000 for that. But let me tell you about this app, which I'm absolutely going to use. It gives you all the local candidates on your ballot. It gives you background on them. So you know how you go into the booth? I don't know about you, but I often do. I know who I'm voting for the big slots, governor, president. But then there are all those other ones.
Oh, the little slots.
Oh my! And they matter because you have as a citizen,
right.
you have a vote.
Well, let me just say right here, there are no little slots, okay?
Right? There are no little, just little people, little
ideas. Just little voters.
Little voters. But this app will let you know, you can sort by issue, you can sort by name, you can sort by history and voting record so that you actually can sit there and make some educated choices.
So if this is created and it's viable, you must be able to bring it into the voting booth.
Oh, yeah, because you can bring your phone in there.
You can, so you can do research and things
sure.
like that.
But would you sit there and do research? I mean, I wouldn't sit Googling
right.
people.
Right, and so, but you know, the thing about it is, too, the little votes or the little jobs that we, those truly are the ones that have the most impact on us.
They're judges. They're people who are making decisions every day.
They're school board members or,
yeah.
you know, the town assessor and things like that.
I think it's a really empowering tool for the voters. Although, Steve, I do wonder if for those, quote, little positions who probably count
on... We
got
to stop saying that.
We do have to stop saying that. The positions that aren't readily recognized
right.
by name, if most people are going to the voting booth and simply hitting... by the party line, right? I don't know who any of these people are, but I'm just going to vote Republican,
right.
right? I wonder if having more information takes away some of that certainty.
Maybe, as long as people check it out, and you know, because it's kind of hard to digest what your village assessor or county assessor, you know, their different positions. That could be a tough one, you know, because I think probably most of us, let's keep it with assessor. If we're going to go vote for our assessor, we're not even sure what the issues are.
That's true.
When it comes to an assessor.
That's true. Although you probably could get a short definition of what that position is. Maybe we need that for the special teams quality control coach.
There you go. That Alex should have a special teams quality control coach for her new app.
Exactly.
All right, Suzanne. So people can hear this. And you know, you're talking about the fact that the... the big payoff. People think it's for women, but men listen too.
Yeah.
When we were just talking about the idea of a sponsor versus a mentor, I don't think that's a gender issue. I think that happens
across the board, right?
I hope my son finds a sponsor one day soon.
Right, and who's not you?
Who's not me? But the big payoff, you can listen to it at WGNplus.com. Thanks very much. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Steve. See you next week.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're here on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Steve Alexander. And Kim Gordon and Dolly McCarthy as well in Traffic Central. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Also in the studio is Adam Ochstein, the founder and CEO of Stradex. Adam, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right, so let's start with the basics, right? Stradex is an HR software firm. What do you do?
We provide HR software and services to small to mid-sized businesses. So everything from applicant tracking all the way through that whole entire employee life cycle to the end of someone leaving, and you have to give them COBRA paperwork and everything.
And it's changed a lot, hasn't it? I mean, the whole idea of wholeness and wellness, I mean, that's kind of been a revolution in HR.
Absolutely. HR used to be, you know, the corporate cop, the ones who you have to go down to the principal's office, then it turned to human capital, and it's our employees are like capital. Now it's more around, you know, we have to engage our employees because Generation Y and X is coming into the workforce, and you have to act differently around them.
So that sort of brings us to our topic, the idea of the bosses staying connected to their employees or the people they boss around. Yeah. And one of the things, and so is that a danger? Is that a problem? I mean, I suppose there are different styles. There can be the guy who's really hands-on, engaged. I'm lucky enough to work for one of those guys, but there also could be those who go back, sit in their office, get the job done, and don't have in much interconnectivity with their workers. I mean, can both work?
Both can absolutely work. I think that the best thing is to be true to your style, right? Don't be something that you're not, because people are going to be a really good, you know, barometer of whether or not, you know, they can see the BS coming through.
Right.
You know, I'm a huge college basketball fan. I went to the University of Maryland. We happened to lose to Michigan State on Saturday. And Tom Izzo, who's one of the most, you know, intense guys, at the end of the game, his player literally picked him up and gave him a bear hug and carried him after he left the court. And that would never happen 20 years ago with a Bob Knight, per se, right? So it's a different generation in the workforce, and you have to engage with people differently.
Well, so you suggest even that the CEO goes out to happy hour with the workers.
Absolutely. You know, obviously, you got to make sure that you're not overserved and, you know, spilling company secrets and things like that. But, you know, you got to be a man of the people.
Well, okay, so you were joking about not being overserved, or not really joking, but what happens if one of your employees is overserved? Then does the boss in the position to have some responsibility to look after the woman, or look after the guy?
I think you respectfully leave.
And find time to go.
Find a time to leave, and then you probably handle it the next day.
Right. And the idea, too, that I like the idea that you say that you should leave the office sometimes, leave your particular office, go sit at an empty desk in the middle of the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, my office door is literally always open, sometimes to a fault.
Okay.
So,
Adam, I'm just picturing this, okay? I'm picturing you, you know, walking out of your office and sitting down next to a new hire, and there are people who are around, they're like, oh my God, he's sitting by me again. You know, I'm under his watch. How do you balance the idea of scrutiny versus teamwork or compatibility?
I think that their coworkers probably will have warned them by the time I actually sit over there. Right. Hey, be careful! You know, he might sit next to you. Another example is during lunchtime. We have a lunch bar, and I'll try to always, if I'm not don't have a lunch meeting, I will sit at the lunch bar, and people will literally walk with their head down because they know I'm gonna grab them and say, "Come sit with me, let's talk."
Okay, so is there a risk to being a little too familial?
I don't think you could ever be too familiar.
Really?
The bottom line is, you know, people say don't take it personally, it's business. When it's your baby, when it's your company, when you put your heart and soul into something, it is personal. These are people you work with 50, 60 hours a week. You know about their wives, children, you know, everything going on in their lives. So there's no such thing as being too familiar. It's human beings.
When birthdays come and, you know, different life events of your workers, that's what a secretary used to do, right?
Yeah.
A secretary would keep track of that. and say, Mr. Ochsstein, it is Megan's birthday today. You might want to, should I pick her up flowers? A CEO these days probably still has administrative assistants to do that.
My administrative assistant is my iPhone and our software.
Really?
So, yeah, our software generates an alert when it's an anniversary or birthday. You know, card is always nice, but I think people more than anything like to know that you're recognizing it's their birthday. It's a special day. You know, I know you went downstate in that soccer tournament for your kid this week, and how'd it go? How'd they do?
Right.
So things like that. Just be genuine and true to yourself. It comes through.
It sounds like you have a pretty inviting workplace.
I do, yeah.
Would everyone who works for you share that? Because I would also imagine that there might be some people for whom, I mean, we're talking about the bosses, but for some employees for whom that might not work.
Yeah, and I think during our interview process, we have 60, 65 employees right now. I interview everyone. I'm usually the cultural interview, so we already know by the time they get to me, can they do the job? Do they have the aptitude and skills to do the job? Mm-hmm. Are they going to play well in the sandbox with our other kids? Are they going to be part of our culture? You know, I'm a big believer in emotional intelligence and high EQ and all that other stuff.
Right.
But it really comes down to do you take yourself too seriously? Can you laugh at yourself? Can you handle criticism and praise? Because some people can't handle praise either, right?
Right. Praise me right now. Let's check.
You're the best, Steve. It's the best noon business hour show in the city of Chicago. Forget the city of Chicago, the whole entire country.
It's all true, but I'm just not comfortable. Have you ever rejected someone who was qualified with experience and skills but just wasn't going to fit in the sandbox?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard.
Do you tell them that?
Yeah. In fact, yesterday I had an interview with an individual, and it wasn't the final interview, but I explained, this is what you're really good at and why you might be a good fit for this job, but here's why you're not going to fit in with our organization. And we're perfectly imperfect, as I like to say, right? Uh-huh. So what makes someone work for us may not make them work for another organization and vice versa.
Wow, it's got to be tough to hear that you've got all the qualifications, you've got the papers, but you're not fun enough.
Yeah, I mean, or not strange enough or weird enough.
That'd be easier to take, maybe. Adam Ochsstein is the CEO of Stratix. Look, thanks very much for coming in. Thanks very much for walking across the street.
Thanks, Steve. It was a nice cold walk, but well worth it.
I hope you know the way back and maybe come back when it's a little warmer.
Thank you.
This is the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.